It's Living the Bream with host of Fox News at Night, Shannon Bream.
All right, today on Living the Bream podcast, we have a topic that is really difficult, but something that will be very helpful for you in the midst of this. We are joined by Dr. Joanna Breyer. And she's educated at Oxford and Harvard. She earned her doctoral degree in 1983. She is a psychologist who has spent more than 25 years working with children with cancer and their families, 10 plus years also working with survivors of childhood cancer. And the good news is there are many of those. She's got an important new book out called When Your Child is Sick, A Guide to Navigating the Practical and Emotional Challenges of Caring for a Child Who is Very Ill. Dr. Breyer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This book is fascinating to me because not only is it full of personal stories, it's got practical information. I can't imagine you've seen families time and time again over the years where they're confronted with something they don't expect at all, and they don't know where to start. Your book is a great place for them to do that. But what is it like for a family when they get the call or the news that their child has something very difficult they're going to have to walk through with them?
Pretty awful. And pretty terrifying. And I tried to do the book in a way that would take them along the treatment course. So beginning with when they hear about the diagnosis and when they have to take their child into hospital, then do the 9 million other things mm-hmm. that require juggling the rest of their lives, taking time off from work, seeing their other children have something somebody to look after them.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about the fact that, I mean, there are just practical things about even finding the right coverage or help from your insurer or from the hospital, getting to the right doctor. I mean, it's got to be overwhelming at the beginning.
Absolutely. And I think parents, one of their biggest fears, in addition to dealing with the awful news of their child's, or the fear associated with their child's diagnosis, is how will they ever get all of this straight? And how will they ever know the huge number of characters who seem to be walking around in white coats? And my hope at the very beginning is to get the cast of characters a little straight and have them understand that they will very fast get the idea of what is going on.
Mm-hmm. And then it's right into doctor's appointments, to treatments, all kinds of things. And I'm sure that there are fears for the parents, but they're the grown-ups, and now they have to work through the fears that the child may have. How do you begin to approach a conversation with them to tell them that they have an illness and there are some things they're going to go through that are going to be unknown to them, maybe scary or painful at some points? How do they even start that conversation?
I would advocate for a little bit at a time, particularly given their age. I mean, the younger they are, the more they need to know the immediate facts and what is immediately going to be happening. And if you know, you don't want to go too far ahead of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that you talk about putting things in terms that they can understand and maybe using, you talk about one young patient who was having a lot of difficulty with some of the early treatments and didn't want to eat and had become very withdrawn. And you tell a story about actually using a puppet over a long period of time to talk to that child, to walk them through some of that. Tell us about some of those tools and ways that you can actually try to put a smile on their face when they're in the midst of this.
Using play and their imagination. Younger children, particularly if they're very imaginative kids, can really use, it's almost like an imaginary friend, but he becomes a real friend, and he becomes very real to that child. And luckily, you don't have to be a very good puppeteer to be.
We don't have to be experts.
No, but if you bring the puppet, I could show you the puppet, what I would often try to do was to have him mirror the feelings of the child. So if it was obvious that the child hated needles or didn't like somebody in a white coat coming in, I would have the puppet having the same fears and having the same dislikes. And they would begin to talk about it to each other and say, well, you know, don't like being here very much, but then introducing ways to make things a little bit better. Maybe, you know, maybe we can do this, that, or the other. Or let's try this. Young children also can be quite suggestible, and therefore they get the idea rather fast that maybe there are some things that they can do.
Mm-hmm. And this little boy, it sounds like you eventually got him eating again and moving on. And as he got better, I thought it was cute that you actually showed up at the clinic or the return visits that he would have and show up there with a puppet and say, okay, this is a new phase, but we're in this together. You're getting better. You'll have to visit the clinic sometimes, but I'm going to be here too.
That's exactly right. With him, we talked about trying to be brave, how you could be brave. And he'd already been brave a lot of times. So we were being brave, and his friend was being brave, too.
They're in it together.
Yeah.
So while you're trying to make sure that your child is moving through these things, getting through each appointment, each unknown or scary event, as a parent, you obviously have your own emotions and fears. What advice do you give to parents that they, as they are now separately dealing with their worries about their child?
Usually, particularly with cancer treatment, with most cancer treatments, though they're very, you know, obviously people are very scared by being told the word cancer has terrible associations. But in fact, for most childhood cancers, the prognosis is very, very good. And it's, you know, it got considerably better during the time I was working at Dana-Farber. And so in a way, you almost have to suspend that, you know, ask a parent to just suspend their disbelief and just be hopeful and trust the doctor's word on some of the things that they're being told will be likely to happen. No guarantees, but the odds are very good in most cases.
What about pushing with medical professionals when you need more information or you feel like you're maybe not getting all of your options, maybe it's not being explained in a way that you can digest it or understand it? I mean, how do you have those conversations with medical professionals?
You ask them to repeat it and to repeat it, and then you ask somebody else to repeat it. Sometimes, at least the place where I worked, there would be team meetings, and there would be a nurse and a doctor, maybe a psychologist or a social worker, and we would all be trying to be saying things in a way that we would be try to be sure that the parent would be able to understand. Mm-hmm. And it really is up to the parent to be able, for different members of the team to be able to be sure and ask if anything has not been understood.
Because I know all of us have had a moment in a doctor's office at some point in our life where we're getting information that feels overwhelming. And I know for me, I've left there and thought, I don't even understand everything they told me. I was so caught off guard or I was so overwhelmed that I didn't get it. And I have to imagine that happens sometimes in these cases.
Absolutely. And sometimes you can suggest to a parent that they record something. Mm-hmm. Now with the iPhones, and it's pretty easy to do. And then to go back and hear it again when there's less stressful feelings.
Emotional.
Yes. Yeah. And then to see if it's clearer. And then to play it again with a nurse who might be available and say, there's just part of this I didn't quite get.
Mm-hmm. Now, often there are siblings who are involved, too. So how do you work on that structure of dealing with them? You know, I've known families where the siblings felt almost ignored because the parents had to focus on the very sick child. But they are people and they have lives, too, and they may have fears as well.
They absolutely do. I mean, they are really hard hit when you know, when there's one of their brother or their sister gets a very serious diagnosis. And they have, I think, it's very, you know, the parents are being torn in a million directions. And the siblings may feel that they are being ignored. They may feel confused. They may feel many different things. You know, I suggest five words to remember, which is sort of to empathize for parents, just to be very straightforward and understanding in terms of how difficult it is for them too, for the brothers and sisters too, that all of these changes and people running around worried, to explain pretty clearly, you know, why your brother or sisters had to be in the hospital, including them as much as possible in any way they can, whether it be to talk on the, you know, to have some screen time with their brother or sister, to come into the hospital, to bring home their brother's homework, to do something, when they come home, to be part of helping. That's a very important element. And then to delegate to other people to do some of the things that are very important for the brother or sister to be able to continue doing.
And so often it's hard for any of us in the midst of a crisis to accept help from other people. Your best words of wisdom on allowing yourself to do that?
To allow yourself.
Just do it.
To do it. And it's the same thing sometimes with fundraisers, accepting the offers that other people will be wanting very, very much to help and not necessarily knowing what to do, but they'll offer to have a bake sale or they'll offer to have a special fundraising event. And the expenses come along and mount up so quickly with a child who is sick that my strong recommendation is to swallow your pride and accept it. It also makes the people who are wanting to help feel good.
Often we feel helpless when we're watching these situations. Right. And you always send a note or an email or on a phone call, say, tell me what I can do. And I know a lot of times it's best to just jump in and do what you see that they need, whether it's a meal or something else, because often people are just, they have such a tough time asking or accepting even when it's offered.
And there are all of these wonderful ways, sort of websites, that you can do it in an organized way, which I'm not an expert, but I have put in the information that people can learn about how to do that, so that, you know, you don't have six
different things going on. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, really, the internet, there are a lot of terrible things, but there's some really good things, and that helps as well, which reminds me of another question about sometimes going onto the internet and looking at information or trying to look up medical diagnoses. I mean, that seems it could be a double-edged sword for families because you don't want to go to the worst-case scenario. Every case is so specific and different, but a lot of times families scrambling for information or just so emotional are going to go there and look for other pieces of information.
And I think that the doctors, at least at Dana-Farber, were very respectful of that. And certainly some parents really did find out information that was very appropriate to ask, and even sometimes the doctors would then go look into it themselves and not assume that it was something that they was unnecessary or superfluous.
Yeah.
So the internet did, but on the other hand, you don't want it to be too scary. I mean, you can sometimes find out very frightening information, and then to bring it up with your doctor. That's what I'd strongly recommend. And they can either explain or what the difference is in between the situation that their child is in versus what the situation that they find on the internet.
Well, you also talk through, and it's good to know, and it was so encouraging to hear that there is such a high cure rate, as you've mentioned, and in the book you talk about for childhood cancer, and there are survivors everywhere, and that's the great news. But there are those difficult cases where people know their child's not going to make it, and they have to talk to them about that. Those were the toughest stories to read, although in some of them they were very uplifting in giving children peace and comfort about that. And you talk about different ages as well. And you talk about one girl, all she wanted was to see her dog. So they snuck the dog into the hospital to spend the night with her. I thought that was precious. But based on ages, how do you talk to your child about this if you've gotten the word now that there's just no hope left?
It really does depend on the child, the parent, and what they see as happening. And a parent is not going to have a conversation with her child until they have really accepted in their own mind, or they won't accept, they won't recognize in their own mind their child is likely to die. And even then, with a young child, there are... it's the same thing about explaining treatment. The idea of time is very limited. And so you don't want to take away hope.
Mm-hmm. With whatever time they have left.
Before the child herself or himself seems to be moving in that direction. And sometimes something that they say or seeing what they are thinking in this situation about what is happening. And then really taking the lead from where they are. And, you know, there are some children who do not want to talk about
what comes next.
What comes mm-hmm. next. And there are some children who do. And
you know your child better than anyone.
And you know your child. And you know what you are comfortable being able to talk to your child about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes it would be in a bath. Sometimes it would be in different situations. And it doesn't have to be a one-time conversation. And it can be an if conversation, as if you did get a, you know, if this treatment doesn't work, let's think about what you'd like to happen. Or it can be, it doesn't have to be terribly direct. It mm-hmm. can be, but it can be moving in the direction of getting information about what the child is likely to want.
Mm-hmm. And I remember you talked about teenagers as well. Obviously, they've got a lot more awareness of what's going on and about the concept of death. And you talked about one teenage girl who'd been through so many treatments, and then when it became apparent that there was no hope left, there was nothing left, that she sort of disengaged from the process that she'd been very involved with to that point about decisions and treatment. And so the parents and doctors, the medical team, still had to make decisions about what was happening with her. And she was almost in denial until the very end, in which she was able to come to a place of peace. Mm. But I imagine with older children, it's a much different conversation.
And again, with a huge range of reactions, with some children or adolescents really being involved in decisions about where they'll be, how much treatment they want. And then others who are determined to make it and therefore really do not want to discuss alternatives. But though that may change, I mean, that may be as
with that young woman,
as with Jan, yes.
Well, it is an amazing book, and it really, though your experience was primarily with cancer patients, it's really for anybody who has a child who is facing something serious, an illness. And I found that, as we talked about, it's so hard often when a family or a member or friend goes through this, we often do not know what to say. It's a very specific situation that. It's a club of its own of people who've had to live through this. But your book, I feel like, is such an incredible tool and a gift that you can pass to a family who's facing this, from the very practical about treatments and finances and insurance, to all of those conversations that you never thought you'd have with your child and just walking families through. But again, with the good news that there are many, many survivors, that's the vast majority of these children. But such a fantastic gift. I'm glad that you put this book together. I know you told us it took you about 3 years, but it is out now, and we hope it'll be a help to a lot of folks out there. Dr. Barr, thank you.
Well, thank you so much.